host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Super excited to welcome Chris Beals. He's the CEO of Weedmaps. He's a great friend. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be on.
Absolutely. And Chris, I feel like the last time you and I were together, we were, I think, harvesting oysters together out in the Hamptons.
We were. You wonderfully indoctrinated me into the wide world of oyster farming. I will say this. You are a very good gardener, and I consider myself one as well. So I don't give that compliment lightly.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm already like getting excited about the spring. That's the first thing I'm going to do when I get back to New York is start with the seedlings because, you know, we're a month out.
I feel like this has turned into like dad chat. I'm like, you know, yeah, if you don't have your seedlings sprouting indoors, ready to transplant outdoors.
Oh my God, it's so true. Well, Chris, listen, it's great to have you on the show. And, you know, for everybody who's tuning in right now, I'm sure everybody knows who Weedmaps is, but they are doing amazing stuff. Obviously, you know, leading technology and software in the cannabis industry. And, you know, little fun fact, you know, before Chris was the CEO, he also ran their legal team. So he was president and general counsel at Weedmaps for a few years. So he's got, you know, a few things that he knows around compliance. So probably makes your job a lot easier as CEO as well. But, you know, Chris, I think, you know, kind of coming off of the Super Bowl, you guys kind of made quite the splash this year with a commercial that you guys had, which really made its rounds digitally called, it was the Brock Ollie commercial. But I think it'd be fun for you to maybe talk to us a little bit about, you know, where the idea came from and, you know, really what was the message trying to convey to everybody?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, one thing I have to say at the outset is, so nobody gets it twisted is, you know, a big kudos and hats off to our creative and internal teams because they actually scripted and ideated and wrote that. So that was sort of as opposed to one of those things where you rely on a big agency. We have some just really brilliant, talented people under Rebecca Larzik on our creative side. And so they did a fantastic job of just coming up with the idea to kind of give to a production company. But yeah, look, we wanted to go for doing, you know, a commercial for the Super Bowl, the biggest event of the year. And I think, you know, in one of the things we wanted to touch on was this idea that you have cannabis now legal in 37 states as of this point. It feels like it's changing, you know, every other day or depending on what side of the bed Virginia wakes up on or whatever else. But, you know, you have this, you know, essentially uniformly legalized product where the vast majority of Americans support it. And yet we can't have a conversation about it. We can't have, you know, even relatively benign, humorous advertisements about it to foster the conversation. And so, you know, we attempted to have get an ad spot with this at the Super Bowl. We were unable to do so, but the theme of the ad is the title character is Brock Ollie, so it sort of refers to broccoli, which is the emoji for the slang emoji for cannabis. Mm-hmm. And so it was him kind of going through the day, and frankly everyone kind of, you know, throwing sort of like stoner stereotypes at him and that sort of thing. And then the ad wraps up with him kind of sitting at his house, hanging out with the pot. Emoji and the maple leaf emoji, kind of saying, "You guys get it, right?" And you know, but it was really like a funny, well done ad, and so it was sad that it got rejected. But I think it was just doubly ironic with this Super Bowl, given that you had sports gambling everywhere, which is legal in less than 20 states, also has the same federal state bifurcation issues, and yet for some reason. We just can't have this conversation. I think the thing that's a real shame about that is look, it's not just, you know, one tech company like us doing an ad. It's hindering the ability to do clinical research, to have open conversation about the benefits of legalization or maybe the risks or the things people, cities, regulators should be mindful of. it's just sort of like the whole topic is taboo, and what's getting lost in there is an honest conversation about something that's everywhere at this point.
Yeah. Well, what I find so interesting too is, like, if you look at the Super Bowl in particular for this year, and you look at who they had performing, right? That's kind of like, that was our generation, you know, mm-hmm. back in the day, which is kind of crazy for the first time. It's just like, oh, they're appealing to people in their 40s, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, and you've got Snoop up there and he's smoking a joint, right, before he gets up on stage. Yeah. And it's just kind of like, you know, when you think about the public and you think about public opinion, you think about all the states that have gone legal, it's kind of like everyone's talking about it. You've got grandparents, you've got moms, dads, aunts, uncles, like all utilizing cannabis now for whatever reason that they're using it, whether it's for, you know, medical, whether it's recreational. And so it is kind of strange at this point, you know, that there aren't, you know, advertisements allowed during the Super Bowl when you've got tons of alcohol companies, right, that are also out there. Yes, it's legal. But to your point with sports betting, it's really the same thing when you think about it. You know, not legal everywhere, legal in certain states. And so I think it's kind of like, we definitely thought from an industry that this was, would be the year, you know, that we would see cannabis ads on television.
We did too. I think it's funny. We've been doing stuff at the intersection of sports medicine, health and wellness for a really long time. And I think one thing that you just reminded me of was something you said was, it was on the alcohol side. We did something with World Surfing, and this was a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the bigger pro surfers kind of came out with this piece, or basically said, listen, you know, there's this trepidation about doing something with weed maps or doing something with cannabis. Yet we have this just unspoken of plague with alcoholism, alcohol-induced violence, and other things actually happening at professional surfing events. And nobody's talking about it. And yet we're taking this kind of crazy double standard with respect to cannabis, which where you don't really see that happen. And I think that was a really, you know, kind of impactful thing to see, which, you know, you think of now with this, with the Super Bowl, and yeah, it's alcohol stuff everywhere.
Right. Well, there was one ad that did make its way through, which got through because it was for a, you know, non-endemic brand. It was, I don't know if you remember seeing it, but it was the Skechers Super Bowl ad that had Willie Nelson in it. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though it was an ad for Skechers, it was really focused on, you know, it was about cannabis, right? Because his whole motto was like, legalize comfort, right, with the shoes. But we all know Willie Nelson, and we all know, you know, he also has a brand out there. So, you know, I think we're getting there, right? We're definitely moving in the right direction. I think what you guys did with the commercial, at least from a digital perspective, like, you guys probably hit so many eyeballs, you know, with that commercial itself. So it really did, it did well for you guys. You know, I know everybody in the industry was talking about it. So, you know, hats off to you and your team.
Oh, thank you.
You know, Chris, what were you guys, at least from, you know, before we move on the commercial, you know, what were maybe some of the goals for that commercial? Like, what was the impact that you guys were looking to have? Was it really about just, hey, guys, everyone's talking about it, like, let's get past this? Or was it really more of a branding play for you guys? Like, what was the overarching strategy there when it came to, you know, impact?
You know, I think it's a funny thing, like, somewhere along the way, you know, look, we've been around for 13 years, and I think somewhere along the way, we got comfortable, and I really love this about us as a company, we got comfortable doing stuff that was about the movement or about just saying the statement. And yeah, it generates impressions for the brand and that, but it's more about, are we driving the conversation forward? And so I think it was really more around, I think, you know, the purpose of the ad was really around the intent of what it discussed, which was like, we got to stop trying to sweep cannabis into the shadows and just like and bring it out into the light and have conversations, normalize it, for God's sake. Yeah. And I think that was really the primary thrust. And I think in some ways, you know, if you're looking back in history, I mean, we did something called our Weed Facts campaign, where we do these billboards, you know, with peer-reviewed journal cited, you know, facts, like states that have legalized cannabis have a 25% reduction in opioid deaths. And we throw it up on billboards. And people lost their mind, but it like generated such a huge conversation. The Boston Globe covered it, and that, and the Weed Maps branding on that was actually really quite small. And I think we're very comfortable with that. I think we've been pushing and have a long track record of pushing for legalization and that sort of thing. And and this was no different.
That's a really good segue. I think obviously government relationships and policy, and I think you guys have done an amazing job on that front, and really, you know, trying to, you know, help push legalization along as well. So maybe, you know, give us a little bit of background. I know that you guys have very deep roots as far as, you know, developing those relationships and really kind of, you know, building out your policy team. Like, obviously, you come from the legal side, Chris. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, you know, when I came to the company just after Prop 64 sort of got baked and was sort of in front of the voters. And so I think we were just kind of getting our feet under us in terms of policy stuff at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the early things that I did was really turn what was a kind of a policy, you know, basically policy work where we just relied on others. And frankly, we're a bit more of a bystander and a more an active, let's actually help drive and shape sensible policy. And so from that, we've grown where we have an internal policy team that's probably about 20 people, and we rely on external firms and all that. But, you know, we've always been a bootstrap company. In fact, we've had to be profitable because, you know, we had to fund our own growth. And I think in that regard, how we do policy was very much focused on how can we scalably impact change. And so a lot of that's been a focus on white papers, educational materials, going to things like the National Conference of State Legislatures, and trying to teach them about how they can do cannabis legalization and why it is a net benefit for them, for their constituents, for everybody else. And so it's been a real labor of love. I think earlier in my career, before I became the CEO, I did a lot of hawking it and going to various state capitals, Tallahassee, Lansing, everywhere in between. And so, so it's really been about fostering and growing to have a transparent, inclusive global cannabis industry. I think we have a pretty open and transparent policy. In fact, we have a requirement that everything we use to educate electeds on and that sort of thing, we publish, because mm-hmm. we don't want people to think we're advocating for, you know, surreptitious or sneaky things. So we're very we have a sort of a transparency policy so that people know what we're pushing for and why we think it's the right thing.
Perfect. And so, Chris, I think also, you know, another kind of big milestone for you and Weed Maps, you know, you really, you know, successfully led the company to go public via SPAC. And, you know, kind of walk us through what that process was like. You know, I think not just obviously going public, but going public is also a cannabis company, right? And a technology company. What was it like to go through that? You know, any highlights, lowlights that you could share? Obviously, there's a lot of folks that are kind of tuning in on similar journeys and always kind of looking at market leaders for inspiration and, you know, maybe things to avoid at the same time.
Yeah, I think, look, you know, we're a 13 and a half year old company, and so it's something we put a lot of thought into doing, but I think we're a bit unusual. So we're publicly traded on NASDAQ now under the ticker MAPS, M-A-P-S. And I think the big challenge for us as we thought about it was, look, at the end of the day, we're a marketplace company that has a suite of kind of power tools for that marketplace. So it's a kind of Amazon meets Shopify thing. And that's just applied to cannabis. And one of the things we were running into or wanted to be cognizant of is we wanted to attract and sort of get interest from investors who are software and marketplace investors. It's not to say there's anything wrong with cannabis focused investors, but this is just, in our view, a really compelling marketplace and tech story and with a really great opportunity and runway applying that to the cannabis sector. And so I think that was, you know, that's why I think it was important for us to be on NASDAQ. And I think it was also why when we were deciding between a regular way IPO, which we could have done, versus a SPAC, I think SPACs have gotten, that's thrown around as a bit of a four-letter word now, But there are really good reasons to do SPACs. And one of those is unlike an IPO, you can take a much longer time on kind of the roadshow and investor building process versus trying to, in a regular way IPO, you have to jam it all in one very condensed set of roadshow meetings. And one of the things we realized is a lot of the investors, the institutional investors who are in our story, back then they didn't know anything about cannabis. And so we go in and start to do the pitches and they would be asking very cannabis 101 questions. And that was the nice thing about the SPAC process is we could take more time to say, listen, we're gonna break this into two parts. In one part, we're gonna explain the macro dynamics of cannabis. And then the second one, we're gonna talk about what we do as a marketplace and software company. And that served us really well in that we were able to get a really, you know, marquee set of institutional investors who, you know, for many of them, this was their first cannabis investment. That being said, I think, you know, look, I think that I would not have felt comfortable doing it earlier in our career. I mean, we've had audited financials since 2014. We've got, you know, a very, you know, we're at roughly 700 folks right now. It's a very built out team and infrastructure, and it's a lot of work and you have a lot of new challenges when you go public. And I think separately, you know, the old dismissive wave of the hand that people sometimes give towards touch the plant cannabis company or cannabis ancillary companies, we're very mindful of. And I think it's really incumbent on businesses in our sector to be twice as buttoned up, twice as professional, you know, unfortunately, because there's just a natural tendency to sort of say, well, it's just weed stuff, you know? And so, you know, it's crazy to say that for a, you know, $25 billion industry on its way to being a $50 billion industry. But that's just the reality. You know, we'd walk into investor meetings and people would kind of open it up with like a weed pun before they'd realize, oh, this is actually a really serious business.
Right. Like this is, you're like technology and software, right? This is not about selling weed. I mean, it's about selling weed, but it's just like, you're not necessarily plant touching here.
Yeah. I mean, you look, you know, we're over 40% engineering, like basically product delivery engineering by headcount. And you look at where we draw people from, and it's Amazon, Facebook, Google, you know, you name it. I mean, so we're drawing top in class talent to do really complex top in class problems. I mean, not to get into the deep data science of it, but basically trying to normalize all of the data and personalization and consumer recommendations for essentially a poorly studied over-the-counter medicinal product that shares a lot of characteristics with farm market goods is a really complex data personalization, marketplace discovery type set of problems. And we tackle all of those head on, I think. And I think that was what the investors realized, but it took them a little bit of time.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting too about you guys, and I think a lot of people don't realize this, is, you know, you've been around for what, 13 years now? So, I mean, you guys have really been, you know, trailblazers, like before most people even put their, you know, toes in the water for cannabis. And so I think I remember you guys very, 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 very early on. And, you know, quite frankly, I think when I thought about Weedmaps, it's not what I think about Weedmaps today, right? And I remember saying to myself, like back in the day, I'm like, how is this legal, right? Because it wasn't legal. And so you guys have come a really long way, and, you know, congrats to you guys too on, you know, obviously 13 years in this space is, you know, is a very long time, you know, for especially a lot of companies that have just been around the last few years. You know, you guys took a risk very early on.
And thank you.
Chris, you know, I know we're kind of running out of time, but I did want to make sure we talked a little bit about, you know, the partnership that you guys had announced probably at the time we were together. It was probably the end of the summer into the fall, but you guys, Kevin Durant, 35 Ventures, you guys announced that really great partnership about, you know, really breaking down the negative stereotypes, you know, with cannabis, but also examining, you know, its potential to aid athletes in wellness and recovery, which is like a very, very important topic today. And people are really starting to pay attention. So yeah. I just wanted to, you know, before we go, like, how is that partnership going? Any cool things you could talk to us about? Obviously it made, you know, a ton of news.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was just, it was an incredible opportunity, you know, I think KD, Rich over at 35 Ventures, Rich Kleiman, just I think really heads up and thoughtful about where cannabis was going, the opportunity it had before him. For people who don't know, I mean, 35 Ventures is basically the venture capital group that KD and Rich have together, and they've made some really early and I think really insightful investments. And so they had, you know, in the partnership conversations, they had a lot of interest in better understanding the space, how to deploy capital in the space, where it was going. But there was a lot of discussion around, well, what about it medicinally? What about what it can do for current athletes, for former athletes? And I think a lot of it came down to also the stigma side of things too. And that, you know, in a lot of these sports leagues, they're very willing to give athletes, you know, painkillers, sleeping pills, everything else. And yet, you know, God forbid that you use cannabis. And I think we saw an opportunity when the NBA went into the COVID lockdown, the bubble, where they basically said, we're not going to test for cannabis anymore. Mm-hmm. You can read into that what you will. But I think for most, you know, people who are paying attention, it was sort of an implicit acknowledgement of the fact that you had a lot of pro athletes in a very stressful situation, and they were going to use cannabis for sleep, for de-stressing, for everything else. And so, you know, the partnership, the NBA did get eyes on the partnership before we did it, but it's just been really cool. We have some stuff coming up that I don't think I'm allowed to talk to yet in terms of health and sports wellness for this coming year. Mm-hmm. With them. And then also I think that they're looking at ways where they can be a partner to us and sort of, you know, finding ways to push us more into the conversation, maybe not just in the NBA and other leagues and things like that. I actually, randomly, someone I used to work with left the legal profession and became a really high-powered sports agent. And randomly, they kind of pinged me afterwards and said, you know, we should talk. Like, it's something I've been talking about with a lot of my clients and that sort of thing. And it was just funny who came out of the woodwork with that.
Very cool. Well, Chris, always a pleasure. Obviously, appreciate you coming on the show and giving us your insight. I look forward to seeing you again in the water. And
yeah,
you're going to come out and visit.
I'll be seeing you this summer once you migrate back north.
That's right. I'll be looking out for all those great stories that are going to be coming out that you can't talk about yet.
Keep your eyes peeled. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, Chris.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.